My name is Kathy Huddleston. I'm the director of clinical research projects at Inova Hospital, neighbor of Howard, and I'm with the Translational Medicine Department. We are currently looking at whole genome sequencing and looking at several different projects. The ones I'd like to talk about now is maternal fetal medicine. So I know this is primary for this audience, but just to say we're looking at the chromosomes, the genes, the major cell types, and trying to look at those 3.2 billion base pairs, and obviously our bioinformaticists are key players on our team. It's hard to believe that everything is really just those four AGCTs, and that you look to your left, look to your right, and we share 99.9% of the same genetic component. But we all know that there's a whole lot more in that helix than just the ACGT. And what we're looking at and what I'm interested in is all the diversity. I think if you look at the whole genome project, how, as we were just talking about, it took 10 years to do and over $1 billion. Now all of a sudden we're doing whole genome sequencing in the course of a few days and under $2,000. And I have no doubt that 5 years from now, it'll be under 24 hours, and it'll be less than $100. And everybody will carry their whole genome sequence on their little, it's either a flash drive or it'll be on your card like you use to open your hotel door. And when you go to get a drug, you'll just flash your card to the pharmacist, and your pharmacogenomics will be on there. Your sequencing will be on there. You guys are young enough to see that. I'm not sure my professional career will see it, but I do think that I hope I live that long to be able to see it. It's right around the corner. It's the bioinformatics that are going to open up that pipeline for us. This, I thought, was a wonderful demonstration of kind of where we are and where we think we're going. If you look at that color swirl, you know, the third row down is 2011 to 2020. And we're just now starting to understand the biology of the disease and moving into the advancing of the science of medicine. These little guys are identical twins. They're identical genetically, but we all know there's a huge difference between genotype and phenotype. And I think that's where the science is really starting to open up now. It's easy for us to look for those phenotypes and then try to find the genotype, or to look at those family histories and then try to find the genotype. You know, that ear crease and cardiac disease. Wouldn't it be nice if we all just had a little code on us somewhere, if we could find all of those phenotypic triggers that would then institute that genotype search? So that's what we're trying to do, and as with all good stories, you have to start at the beginning. We really do believe that the fetus, the embryology, the first couple, 3 years of life are the cornerstones of health. The origins of health are stored there. So if we can look at maternal newborn studies, we know that that little preemie is a whole lot more than just ATCGs. But we spend over $26 billion in premature infant care and all of the assorted illnesses and adverse outcomes related to. We've made very little progress in the last decade. We still have 500,000 babies that are born premature every year. And so one of the first studies that we've looked at that I wanted to talk about today was the molecular study of premature birth. And just to sort of add a little bit more complexity in addition to that 3.2 billion base pairs, if you look at my saga here, my mom was born in 1922, so I'd like to think that my grandmother was a roaring 20s fun going lady, probably smoking and drinking, as everybody's pictures in the Great Gatsby. My uncle was exposed to chemical warfare in World War I and came back home. So if my grandmother is the one with the cigarette there, my mother is the fetus, those are my little reproductive third generation cells that were cooking then. And then so then you look at the roaring 20s, you've got the depression and the stress and malnutrition. I was born and raised on a tobacco farm, and half of the farm was lost during the Depression. World War II, my father spent almost 4 years overseas, the stress and the chemical exposures during that time. The industrial boom with the chemical exposures, farm and ag business. And then I live, I think, 6.8 miles from the White House on Pennsylvania Avenue. I was raised on a farm, but obviously very close to urban living and Andrews Air Force Base. So there was an urban living and a pollution platform there, too. I didn't give birth until the mid-90s. I was one of those later-in-life choice mamas. And so when you think about the exposures, it's a whole lot more than just our genetic makeup. So we entered into this molecular study of preterm birth. It took us about 2 years, and we've enrolled 875 families. 570 were full-term families. 305 were preterm families. Howard is sitting in D.C. We're sitting right outside D.C. And what's wonderful is you don't have to travel globally to do global health. We've got everybody. And so we have a very diverse racial and ethnic community. And one out of three of our research families, they were born outside of the United States. We did whole genome sequencing to include RNA and methylation, which is all in progress now. But my side of the story is really just to look at the clinical data and to look at race, ethnicity, education, and socioeconomic status. These, out of our research families, these are our country of births. We had 77 countries represented and 10 ancestral specific reference genomes. As you know, most of the reference genomes were those, you know, old white guys that lived in upstate New York. We truly have a much greater diversity in our genomic population. And so what I wanted to do was really look at, you know, are we what we think we are? You know, when I ask somebody their ethnic or their racial background, how well is that really understood? So this is a principal component analysis looking at genetic ancestry versus country of birth. And you can see we're just all over the place. If you look at that in that more traditional 3D model, again, very diverse, very just sort of spread from one end to the other. One of my favorite ones is looking at the South Asian is sort of a nice cluster in the PCA model, but I love the Caribbeans. They're just all over the place. They go from one end of the spectrum to the other. So your genetic ancestry is a whole lot more than just the tone of your skin. And obviously, what we're asking people may not necessarily reflect what they really are. When I looked at the electronic medical record, race wasn't completed half of the time. And we had our family participants not only list their race and their ethnicity, but we also asked them for their country of birth and their parents' country of birth. And so race was only documented in the electronic medical record 50% of the time, and yet 50% of the time of that, it was not congruent with what they told us. And I think a great example is my husband's Hispanic, but he was adopted, so we end up with the last name of Huddleston versus Ina Osa, which is what's on his birth certificate. They look up at me, they see a white female, they go, shh. My children are Hispanic, but they're never going to get marked Hispanic by the registration clerk at 3 in the morning because she's going to look up, see two Anglos whose last name is Huddleston, and she's going to mark them as Caucasian non-Hispanic. So I think I think it demonstrates that there's a whole lot more to our DNA than just the sequencing piece. We need to ask more questions. We need to think about it differently. This is a picture of the D.C. area. This is our Ketchum area. We kind of go through Northern Virginia into a little bit of D.C. and a little bit of Maryland. If you look at our preterm and full-term numbers within that area, we're kind of scattered throughout. So I picked two of the highest preterm zip codes. And if you look, Northern Virginia is a fairly affluent area. I think we have one of the top five median incomes in the country, and about 85% of our population has a bachelor's. So it's when we looked at these two areas, one had a very high affluent Caucasian household income, $130,000, where the average in Virginia is $60,000. But the other one was to the other extreme. They had a greater Hispanic population, a greater Black population, and they had a median income of $86,000, still above the poverty level. But you can see that these two communities were our high preterm communities. So in that respect, poverty and zip code did not pan out. My guess is the top one, there's a artificial reproductive technology center that was in the center there, so that could have played a part. What we saw was mom's country of birth, mom's mom's country of birth, mom's dad's country of birth, maternal education, and a BMI greater than 34 did play significant differences between preterm and full term. I think we just need to realize and promote, and Thanksgiving dinner is a great time to look, that our genes carry our ancestors' stories in them. We need to have full hereditary disclosure when we are talking to our families. We need to explain that there's lots of wonderful protective evolution that has happened over the time. You look at sickle cell anemia, and it's protective for malaria. You look at where people came in Africa, and it maps very closely. You look at CCR5 delta 32, and it's a T lymphocyte. We think it's associated with either bubonic plague or smallpox, and that seems to be somewhat protective for HIV, which throws that whole understanding of why some people aren't as receptive to the HIV. But there's more to the story. You look at the flamingo and you realize the flamingo's not pink except for what he eats. So there's a whole lot more than just the genetic component of it. Times are changing, things are changing. The computer and technology is really going to be what drives us into the bioinformatics understanding and really being able to find that needle in the haystack, and now they're saying it's more of like finding the needle in the haystack of needles. But people are our most important part of our research. We need to establish those planks of trust and transparency, autonomy, respect, beneficence, and now non-malfeasance. We need to have those understandings. There are a can of worms that's always ready to be opened on the LC issues. I think we're much farther ahead on the science than we are on the ethical issues, but we've got to build that bridge of research into genomics and ancestral healthcare. Thank you.